Empire podcast this week. It's episode 199. So somebody call 999 as we have a podcast emergency. Our guests, 999's Anthony Mackie and Aaron Paul, are just too damn good. Plus, we have the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast. I would like to remind you that calling 999 without a genuine emergency is a very serious offence and could lead to prosecution, so don't do that. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. I'm joined in this week's podcast, as ever, by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up, making his first appearance for a while, is our art house guru, a man who, when he runs out of Wim Wenders films to watch, calls 999. Or 999, because that's German for... It's Phil Desemlian.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Excellent. Where have you been?
I've been around, Chris. I don't know what to say. I've been around, biding my time.
Have you been in an art house odyssey?
I have.
Oh, you
want specifics?
Yeah.
Hauling a small boat over Primrose Hill. That's what I've been doing. No, I've been around. I've been doing interviews on this thing.
You have been doing,
I've appeared, I've popped
up. It's
not like I've disappeared completely. Anyway, I'm back.
This is true, you're back. You're back. And last but certainly not first is a man making his second appearance, technically third, if you count the Deadpool spoiler special. Third appearance on the podcast. He's our new deputy editor. He's a tough, gritty, no-nonsense, street food-eating northerner type who wouldn't dream of calling 999 even if both his arms were hanging by his sides or on the floor in pools of blood, which would make more sense. It's Johnny Pyle. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. I can't complain.
I'm just busy, based on your introduction for Phil, I was busy Googling what the actual emergency service number was in Germany.
What is it?
It's 112 for fire and 110 for police, which I think is very confusing in emergency, that you have different numbers.
Yeah, usually, not to stereotype everyone, but the Germans are quite efficient, aren't they?
I mean, you would think so.
I've gone full Jeremy Clarkson. Oh, God.
And don't fire and police come at the same time?
What if you want an ambulance?
No, I think you have to choose.
No,
you've been mugged, surely, an engine turned up.
Okay, well, if you're calling for a fireman, I think a policeman is obliged to turn up as well.
Is that right? Crowd control, I think.
Is that right?
You're probably right.
If you have a cat caught in a tree and you call the fire brigade, a policeman turns up as well to arrest the cat?
I mean, I'm just on hearsay in movies. I'm just basing this on what I've seen in the movies.
All right, fair enough. What happens if you shine a bat signal in the sky?
That's fictional.
What's the number for Ghostbusters?
They actually flash it up on the screen at one point in Ghostbusters, so I don't know.
It probably starts 555.
Oh, 0800 555 Ghosts.
Gotcha.
There you go. That's probably what it is. Someone will now write in and tell us exactly what it is. Johnny, this is only your second podcast proper, so, my introduction
for
you.
Stop talking so much.
Know
your place.
Ease your way in. Your pod personality has not yet been defined, which is why I didn't introduce you. Phil, from the off, he nailed his art house colours to the art house mast. So, You can shape your personality now.
Well, based on the intro, I'm the street food guy.
That's based on something you said last week. You are the street food guy who just literally, with your big mighty paws, rips food off people's plates, whether or not they want you to. You just stick your hand into steaming cauldrons of food.
You're like Jon Favreau in Chef, right?
Almost entirely different
exactly
to him.
Exactly the same.
I mean, should I just give it one street food recommendation a week? And then we'll go into the movies.
Until we run out, yeah. Why not?
It's not actually street food, but it used to be street food. The bowler across the street from our office is delicious. It's delicious meatballs.
Really good.
Delicious meatballs. Okay. Are we going to get, in future podcasts, to the point where you're just going, there's a recommendation, do you like burgers? Well, there's a Burger King, he is the king of burgers, and you can find him in Brent Cross Shopping Centre.
The guy outside Arsenal on a Saturday afternoon.
Actually, Pybury Corner is very good around there on a Saturday afternoon. Only on match day, so. Right, anyway, welcome, Johnny. Here's today's question. It has been sent in via email from Amy in Ayr. And she says, hello, it's my... I seamlessly went Scottish there. Hello, it's my 32nd birthday today. Congratulations. Happy birthday, Amy.
Happy birthday.
Although I think she sent this in last week.
Oh.
Ah. I'm watching 16 Candles, as I always do on around my birthday, as it's also the podcast's 200th anniversary coming up. When is it? What do you think the best birthday scene in a movie is, or is there a film you particularly like to watch on or around your birthday? Now, that's technically two questions in one, but I'll allow it, as it's Amy's 32nd birthday. Once again, happy birthday. And let's take the second part first. Is there a film you particularly like to watch on or around your birthday? Johnny.
No.
Same here.
The Seventh Seal. The inexorability of death. Hooray! No, not really. Not really.
I don't know. I just going out and stuff.
Yeah. I suppose on birthdays.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I do remember watching Raiders of the Lost Ark on my 12th birthday, which was the greatest day ever.
Oh, okay.
So probably that.
I'm trying to rack my brains for films I went to see on my birthday. And actually, all I can remember is... Chris Russius's birthday when he was 10, and we went to see The Mighty Ducks of the Champions.
Wow.
But I actually don't even remember going to see films on my birthday. That's the only birthday party cinema trip I can remember.
It was someone else's birthday.
Yeah.
That's disgraceful.
I remember other people's birthday cinema outings a lot. Usually seeing really weird, terrible films. 2010, A Space Odyssey 2 was one that stuck with me.
That's not what it's called. 2010, A Space Odyssey 2.
Isn't it? What's it called?
It's just called 2010, A Space Odyssey.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. They didn't add the 2.
Yeah, I was over-egging the space pudding.
Okay. The 2010 alone.
I was like 7. I don't even know what I was doing there.
What a film for a 7-year-old birthday party.
I saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit on my friend Wayne Moran's birthday. We went to Friar Tuck's at Burger Chain in Northern Ireland. We went to the branch in Newry. And then afterwards, we celebrated by watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Now, that was a day. That's probably the 17th best day of my life.
That's still a good film. I mean, that's a film that stood the test of time more than the very first Mighty Ducks film. Because everyone knows the second one.
Yeah, which was already not standing the test of time when it came out. Yeah, Roger Rabbit, that's a good one. Anyway, that's the first part of the question. Sorry, Amy, we don't really do that. But the best birthday scene in a movie. Okay.
That one's easy.
Okay, take it.
It's Notting Hill.
All right.
It is.
No, it isn't.
They go round. Okay, well, this is the first date between whatever Hugh Grant's character is called and whatever Julia Roberts' character is called.
That's his actual surname. Anna Scott.
Anna Scott.
But he is actually called Jeremy. just really tough to write out on census forms.
They go round and Hugh Bonneville doesn't recognise her, and they have that hilarious chat about
I'm laughing already.
Acting.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes, that's a good scene.
That is a good scene. That's the best scene in the movie.
That's a good scene.
It's the best scene in the best of Richard Curtis's movies.
Ooh, that's fighting words. It's got punchy.
I didn't know that was a birthday party.
That one.
Yeah, it's his sister's birthday.
That's the girl
from Vicar of Dibley.
That's right. That's a pretty high pressure first date for Anna. Julia Roberts' character, isn't it?
I'd say, well, for Hugh Grant's character, William Thacker. William Thacker?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Good.
Where did Jeremy come from?
Jeremy looks like a Jeremy, doesn't he? He looks like someone who could have had germization in his life.
Sure.
Okay. Hmm. That's a good one. Phil.
Yes.
Death's birthday in The Seventh Seal is obviously
classic.
Huge. what's your choice?
My choice would be two Steve Martins.
Okay.
The Jerk.
Yes.
His birthday party in The Jerk, where he's informed that he's not the birth child of the family, and he announces that he asks, "You mean I'm going to stay this colour?" Is amazing. And also, when Cowboy Dan doesn't show up in Parenthood for his kid's birthday.
Of course.
It's funny, it's very moving as well. I really love that scene. He just improvises. He tends to be really good at like making animal balloon shapes, but it's just a hilarious bit of sort of childhood crowd control when he turns up as Cowboy Gil, claiming to have slaughtered Cowboy Dan on the way to the party and blown a hole in him this big and slipped around in his guts. Cowboy Guilty. Yeah, so I love that scene. That's a really, really, it's a great one. It starts off with him like doing the pinata and the kids lose interest because something else happens, and it's just Steve Martin hacking at the pinata and just venting all of his frustration. And then it sort of cuts and he comes back and he's got a saw out and he's just cutting it in half. it's just a great scene, that one. So those two. And the game as well.
The game?
All of the game.
Yes.
Yes.
That's one hell of a party. Probably the statute of limitations has run out and that one we could probably... Well, we shouldn't give away the ending.
Let's not give away the ending, but let's just say that it involves many... many crazy and weird things that if I tried on my brother would end in homicide.
Michael Douglas has a party to remember, or one he will never be able to forget, should we put it that way, in the game. The question's very interestingly phrased. So it's, what do you think the best birthday scene in the movie is? So I don't think I'm going to start listing loads of birthday scenes. If you have a particular favourite, do send it in to us via the usual channels and we will try and read it out on next week's show, which I believe is the 200th show, which I believe is a live show, which I believe has put me into a panic. But either that's neither here nor there at this point in time. So the best birthday scene in the movie for me is The Omen. It is Damien Thorne's 5th birthday, and his parents, Gregory Peck and Lee Remick, are throwing a party for the little tyke in the grounds of their country mansion. And it's a lovely party. They got swings, they got roundabouts, they got clowns, they got magicians, and they have their nanny hanging herself from the something like the 3rd or 4th floor of their home. She calls out. It's a very, very, amazing scene. This is where she calls out and she gets everyone's attention and she goes, "Damien, it's all for you." And she swings off the balcony.
That doesn't sound nearly as funny as Cowboy Girl.
Suicide. No, it's not. But I think it's an important moment in young Damien's life. It really helps him come to terms with some stuff later on. But also it paves way for Billy Whitelaw's Mrs. Baylock to come in and terrify everyone, quite frankly. So that's a great scene. But I would really not want that to happen at any birthday party I've ever been to or will ever throw.
And do you have a depressing one?
Yes, Roger Murtaugh in the bath at the beginning of Lethal Weapon.
Oh yeah,
when he's turning 50.
Oh yeah, that's
His family burst in on him.
That's
and
a good one.
He declares for the first time, "I'm too old for this shit."
Yay!
And then hangs around for about. He's meant to be retiring, and then he hangs around
six more movies.
Yeah, six more movies, and all sorts of stuff as well. All right, so Amy and Air, happy belated birthday once again. We hope we answered your question to our satisfaction. I don't know if we answered it to our satisfaction.
Not really.
Or not.
I actually hate Notting Hill.
I've never seen the game,
so no.
Huge fan of Jeremy. So, in the immortal words of Alan Partridge in the Partridge Family, if you want to send in your questions to the Empire Podcast, do so by sending them on Twitter. We're at Empire Magazine. You can use the hashtag Empire Podcast. You can email us podcast@empireonline.com, and you can Facebook us as well. That is something that is allowed. We're on Facebook, Empire Magazine. We get a lot of messages on Facebook, not a lot of questions for the Empire Podcast. Strange.
Very nice question, though, and happy birthday for last
lovely
week.
Lovely question. And, happy birthday for last week.
This woman has been wished happy birthday by us more than any of her friends now. We keep on saying it.
You know what, Johnny? Do you know who hasn't wished her happy birthday? I noticed I have. I noticed Phil has. You have not. Why not? Why do you hate Amy and Air, Johnny?
Amy, that just isn't true. It's a horrible piece of slander that I'll be having strong words with Chris about after when we're off air. But, it's a week since Amy's birthday. I mean, you clarified that at the start.
Thereabouts, yeah.
Happy birthday for last week, Amy, and then also for 51 weeks' time.
Oh, hedging.
Oh, look at that. He's doubling Amy's favour now. Well, happy 40th birthday, Amy, for 8 years' time.
Oh, you want me to up the ante?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, fair enough.
The line, even Amy wants to move on.
Let's talk now some movie news. What's been happening in the world of Hollywood and beyond this week? The BAFTAs happened on Sunday.
Yeah.
That was all very exciting, wasn't it? What did we make of the BAFTA winners? So the Revenant was the big one.
As expected.
As expected.
I mean, I hope that's what we said we expected last week when we...
I can't remember what I said 5 minutes ago. Happy birthday, Amy and Air, by the way, in case I didn't say that 5 minutes ago. But yeah, I don't know what I said. I think we said the Revenant.
I think we said certainly that Leo would win, and I would be very disappointed when he did. But he did. Congratulations, Leo. I always wanted it to be you.
And he had a big smile on his face as well because, he knew how much it meant to you that he'd won this award.
Do you think, my question of the week is, do you think Leo has been playing Leonardo DiCaprio's red carpet run and what his highest score is on that?
Leo's red carpet rampage.
Rampage, that's it. Yeah.
Which, if you don't know what it is, it's a game in the style of a sort of 80s video game, like a sort of Nintendo-y type thing that someone has made. I don't know who made it, but it's on it's on the internet. But Red Carpet Rampage is a lot of fun.
Any surprises at the BAFTAs?
Any surprises at the BAFTAs? I think Kate Winslet winning was a surprise.
Yeah, she seemed surprised.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I was there, very close to Kate. at least in where I was sitting rather than anything
else. I was exactly 51 yards away from Kate. That's very precise, I know, but I've been told to make sure it is 51 yards.
I took a trundle wheel to check.
Yeah. A laser pointer just to make sure. Yeah, that's 51 yards. We're all good, Kate. Thank you. Carry on. Win your award.
Yeah, she was very surprised, but... a really lovely touch is she walked past Leonardo DiCaprio as she went to the stage, and he gave her a little wink.
Aww.
Cheeky.
I thought maybe a little lovely touch would be they climbed onto a large piece of wood together and just lay there for a bit.
And then she was like, sorry, there's just no room.
There's just no room.
What about over there? Nope.
Off you pop, DiCapsicle. DiCap, because he's a pop. Anyway, yeah, I think that she was surprised.
And quite right.
And quite... No, it's a very, very good performance.
Yes, it is.
It's a very good... You're a flip-flopper, Johnny. I like that. down with Kate Winslet. Yay, up with Kate Winslet. No, she's very, very good in that film. And that's a category I don't think that's had a front-runner. Every other category has had a front-runner. So Brie Larson nailed on for Best Actress. Leo DiCaprio nailed on for Best Actor. Even in supporting, not over here, weirdly enough, because Sly Stallone wasn't nominated by BAFTA. So Mark Rylance took the award. But in the States, Stallone is the front runner, and I'd be amazed if he didn't win.
But Rylance was certainly the front runner for BAFTA.
Yes, he was. Absolutely. But what did we make of the show itself? You were there, Johnny. You actually saw it.
I was there, but
I didn't see it. I was working at the time, so I didn't. I saw bits and pieces of it. I thought Rebel Wilson's speech was very funny.
Very good.
I thought Sacha Baron Cohen's was funny in concept, perhaps not in execution.
The great thing about Rebel Wilson's speech was the person controlling the altar cue at the back of the theatre, right, who completely lost it and was trying to find out where she was on the thing. And obviously she wasn't anywhere because it wasn't on the altar cue because
she was ad-libbing.
She's absolutely not going to tell them what she's going to say if she's saying that. But this guy just, well, you just see the words go up and down, up and down, up and down.
Really?
Where am I? And then just decided to just, you know, settle on and the nominations are and just wait for her to get there.
I thought she was great. What did we think of Stephen Fry's performance as host? He was on our podcast last week, National Treasure.
I mean, he's quit Twitter, hasn't he?
He has quit Twitter. He's a quitter, a Twitter quitter. But he'll be back.
Presumably. I mean, if they are friends, it doesn't seem to be a problem.
Yeah, so this is, again, in case you don't know, this is the controversy that sprung up after Stephen Fry, after Jenny Beaven won Best Costume Design for Mad Max Fury Road, and she took to the stage, and she dresses in quite an unorthodox manner, I think that's fair to say. And then Stephen Fry said, only a great costume designer, I'm paraphrasing here, only a great costume designer could come to the BAFTAs dressed like a bag lady. And of all the cracks he made during the night, including a series of cracks that suggested he was some sort of weird Joseph Fritzl-esque
keeping Eddie Redmayne
serial
in his basement.
Killer. Yeah, keeping Eddie Redmayne in his basement. He wanted to do that. And his joke about Michael Fassbender and Steve Jobs was, he looked so amazing. He looked so amazing. I wish I could click on him, drag him up to the stage, and then a short time later delete my search history, which implies he's going to do something unspeakable to Michael Fassbender. So, so those jokes were fine. But for some reason, offhand comment about Jenny Beaven got the internet hordes up in arms, the Pitchfork and Torch Brigade. And Stephen Fry then took to Twitter and said, look, we're old friends, we have been for a long, long time. She got the joke, she understood the joke, it's a private joke, leave me alone. And then he was hounded a bit more and then he left. What do we think? What do we make of that?
Well, as she walked up to the stage, there was an element of, wow, she doesn't give a fuck. She was just wearing jeans, a top and a scarf. It's not really bag lady.
No.
But I mean, you know, I see where he went for the humour, but like, there was an element of, wow, she doesn't care at all, you know. And so the way she was dressed was, you know, there was a ripple of comments about it, you know, to the person sitting next to you, I assume. And then he made the comment and suddenly everyone else is like, well, I wasn't thinking that.
I think he'll be back. He'll be back on Twitter.
He's left Twitter before, right?
He has left Twitter before.
He'll come back.
He'll come back. But the show itself... The good thing about the BAFTAs is it doesn't try and emulate the Oscars. It doesn't have loads of musical performances. It's very, very straightforward. It's It's here, I'm Stephen Fry, I'll do some jokes now. Here are some people to nominate to present awards. Some of them will be good, some of them will be not so good. You either, and then here come the winners, and that's it. Bye. And there's no musical numbers, there's none of that stuff. There's no one coming out and doing, trying to really do high concept funny bits. I quite like the way it flows. The thing started for us, it started at what, 7 o'clock? It starts by 7, yeah.
I don't remember, sorry.
Starts by 7, ends about 9:30, 9:45. That's perfect. That's what the Jemison Empire Awards comes in at, roughly 2.5 hours. That is perfect. Take note, Oscars. And also, while we're talking about the Jemison Empire Awards, nominations were announced.
They're
this
out,
week.
Well, today for us and tomorrow. No, yesterday for you when you listen to it tomorrow. Oh, time's difficult, isn't it?
I know, this temporal stuff's really tough.
So where do you want to start?
Where shall we start?
What's the best film choices? What could I vote for if I were allowed to?
Okay. Best film presented by Sky Movies. Uh-huh. The nominations are The Hateful Eight.
Never heard of it.
Mad Max Fury Road. The Martian.
Okay.
The Revenant. And Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Ooh.
Rings some bells.
That's a very solid list of films there.
You would vote for them all in a different year.
I would vote for most of them in a different year.
Does that make sense that any one of those feels like a worthy winner?
What's interesting to me there is that the Empire Awards have always been and will always be voted for by the public. So these nominations have been compiled from the public vote. The public have been voting in their thousands over the last, what, month, 2 months, something like that. This is where we've arrived at. And what's interesting to me is that if you look at that, the Revenant, The Hateful Eight, Martian, Mad Max Fury Road, and yes, obviously Star Wars, but the obvious blockbusters I thought would be in there aren't.
Jurassic World.
No Jurassic World, no Spectre, no Avengers Age of Ultron. This is interesting to me.
Well, these five films are better than those three.
I would disagree with that on
Ultron, I know.
I know.
Sicario.
No Sicario, but that is in another category, isn't it, Johnny?
Best Thriller, presented by the Corinthia Hotel London.
That's the important part.
Bridge of Spies, The Gift, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, Sicario and Spectre.
I think this is a really solid, really good list of nominations that reflect. There are some awards-worthy nominations in there, but there are also films that people see, people go to see, people pay with their own money to see. Which is
If you were allowed to vote, Johnny, which would be your choice of best films?
I think best film is very, very difficult. I would probably go... I'd probably go for Star Wars.
Would you?
I just had such a good time with that film twice.
What would you vote for, Phil?
Mad Max.
Okay. Force Majeure is not in the list, by the way, just in case you're wondering. This is an outrage. I'd go for either Mad Max or Hateful Eight from that little lot. That'd be good. That'd be solid. There's some really interesting categories. Try and pick a winner from this little lot. Best Female Newcomer. Olivia Cooke, Me and Errol and Diane Girl, Rebecca Ferguson, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, Micah Monroe, It Follows, Belle Powley, The Diary of a Teenage Girl, and Daisy Ridley, Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Belle Powley.
Oh, wow. Bloody hell. Rebecca Ferguson for me.
No. I think Belle Powley, 2-1.
Oh, 2-1? 2-1 to Belle Powley. This is legally binding, by the way. Best Sci-Fi Fantasy, Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2, Jurassic World, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, Star Wars The Force Awakens. Oh, wow. It's almost like best film. Like a redux. Best male newcomer, Abraham Atta from Beasts of No Nation, John Boyega, Star Wars The Force Awakens. Was he nominated for Attack the Block as well in the same category a few years ago? He was. Okay.
He was, and that's happened before. There is precedent.
Okay. There is precedent.
It's the second coming. Like,
Gemma Arden was nominated twice for best best female newcomer. Thomas Mann, Me and Earl, The Dying Girl, Jason Mitchell, Straight Outta Compton, and Jacob Tremblay for Room. Intriguing. I wonder if the power of Star Wars is going to power people to...
Well, it certainly did for the only audience voted award at the BAFTAs.
Oh,
he won.
He did win
Rising Star EE Rising Star Award.
Rising Star Award, best comedy presented by Absolute Radio. Ant-Man, Me and Earl and a Dying Girl, Spy, Trainwreck, Inside Out.
Yes,
it's good.
Very
best
good.
Horror, Crimson Peak, The Hollow, Insidious Chapter 3, It Follows, Krampus. Oh, good, excellent. Best thriller, as you've already said, Bridge of Spies, A Gift, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, Sicario, Spectre. Best British film. Presented by The Hollywood Reporter. 45 Years, Legend, Macbeth, Spectre.
Oh.
Can I say Macbeth? The Scottish film. Spectre and Suffragette. Jameson Best Actor, Matt Damon, Leonardo DiCaprio, Michael Fassbender for Macbeth and Steve Jobs. Tom Hardy for Legend, Mad Max Fury Road. And Michael B. Jordan, yes, for Creed. We're sliced alone. Best Actress, Emily Blunt, Brie Larson, Jennifer Lawrence for Hunger Games, Charlize Theron, yes, for Mad Max Fury Road, and Alicia Vikander, the Danish Girl. We are putting right the wrongs, Oscar and BAFTA here. This is great. Best Director, J.J. Abrams, Ryan Coogler, yes, Alejandro Gonzalez, Iñárritu, George Miller, yes, and Ridley, you may notice I've got some favourites here, and Ridley Scott for The Martian. Best TV Series has a new one this year, Marvel's Daredevil, Fargo, Game of Thrones, Marvel's Jessica Jones, This is England 90, and then there's a whole bunch of other ones as well, but this is a really solid, really good list of nominations. Well done, Empire Readers.
Vote now at www.empireonline.com/awards.
Empire Awards?
Empire Awards.
No, it's just awards.
Go to the homepage and
go
from there.
We have no idea what the hell the URL is. This is.
But vote now and farcical. Vote hard.
Vote hard.
Vote hard or... Yeah. Vote home.
In the Brian Butterfield style, it's www.empireonline.com/awards. Right, so that's enough awards malarkey. Some other stuff to talk about this week is that Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 started filming and has added some new cast members to its cast.
I hope it's Kurt Russell.
You know what? I hope it's Kurt Russell as well. Let me just Google this and find out. It's Kurt Russell! Kurt Russell has been added to the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. The character he's playing has not been confirmed, but it's almost certainly going to be the dad of Chris Pratt's Peter Quill. We know that he will play a major part in this movie, and Kurt Russell just feels right to me. We've said this in the podcast before. I've been lobbying hard for this to happen and dreaming of it, if you will. Kurt Russell in a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie is already a 7-star event for me, but what do we think of this?
You've actually been lobbying for this to happen.
I have. Well, not lobbying. I haven't taken a petition or anything, but you know, I mentioned it on the podcast a couple of years ago after the film came out, and I said I've tweeted about it from time to time. Wouldn't it be great if...
Feels like a great marriage of... tonal marriage of, like, Russellness and... the Guardians world just feels right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Straight away.
Chris Pratt.
I don't know why. Just yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm. Although then I started overthinking it.
Oh.
In my usual kind of way. So I started thinking, because we don't know which character he's going to play. We know that Peter Quill's dad in the comics is Jason, who's a rubbish character, and James Gunn thinks so as well. He's changed the character's name and origin and all that sort of stuff. We don't know who he's playing yet. I'm wondering if he's playing Kurt Russell.
Hmm. I remember this conversation actually ground the office to a halt last night.
Yeah, but and it's all about left. To ground the podcast to a halt as well.
Okay.
Because, think on it here. Okay, so Kurt Russell is the first actor who's been cast in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 who Peter Quill could recognise, right? You with me so far?
Kind of.
You with me so far? All right, so in 1988, when Peter Quill is abducted and taken from Earth... to the confines of outer space, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Russell is already a big star.
Oh, that's, I see what you're saying.
So
he's seen like a...
So when he sees
right.
a person who looks like Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I mean, this is a man who's already discussed with Kevin Bacon, right, in the first movie. So if he sees Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, he's going to say, you look like Kurt Russell, right? So my thinking is, what if Kurt Russell is playing himself and he is... Peter Quill's father. The maths work out. I've looked at this. So if Peter Quill's 8 years old in 1988, then he was born 1980, right? So that means that Kurt Russell didn't have to cheat on Goldie Hawn.
Is this why you were asking about Goldie Hawn yesterday?
Yeah. They got together in 1983 on the set of John and Demi's Swing Shift. So if you know that wonderful union would not be affected by Kurt Russell actually being...
Would that mean
Peter
that
Quill's
the
dad?
Actual real Kurt Russell would have to be a character in the Marvel universe?
Yes.
The comic book universe.
But also what it means is that Kurt Russell in this universe would be some sort of space alien imbued with incredible powers, and I think we can all buy that.
Oh my God.
This is just blowing my mind.
That is crazy mental.
This is the greatest real person appearing in a comic book since... I think since Spandau Ballet were in Roy the Rovers.
Spandau Ballet and Roy the Rovers.
In the early 80s. I mean,
oh
this
my
is
word.
Just like... it's almost certainly happening. I was, as you started, I was like, this would be terrible, and now, this would be awesome.
I've turned you around on it. It's amazing. And I, that's right. Spandau Ballet, they signed for Melchester Rovers, didn't they? They played
both of them, or just one?
It was two Kemps. It was both Kemps. They signed up, and they played.
I wasn't lying to you, Chris.
That's amazing. And but now you just make me think of that horrible bus crash that Melchester Rovers had, where a lot of them died, and it was, and then Roy Brace lost his, I think he lost his foot.
Was it on his birthday?
He lost his foot in a helicopter crash.
He lost his foot in a helicopter crash.
Did he?
Yeah. March 93.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's so bleak.
A lot of bad things have happened to Roy Race over the years.
Oh boy!
But that was the end of the weekly comic, and it came back in the September of 93 as a monthly.
Yeah.
Oh,
oh
gosh. Okay.
Anyway, I think
it was a nice idea, but
that's
probably not true. We've seen a picture from it, the first sort of production still, in which we have Mini Groot perched on the shoulder of.
I'm going to let you
dig myself out of this one. Oh, you know, but you're not going to tell me.
It's Drax.
Okay. Drax. He's on Drax's shoulder.
Dave Bautista's Drax.
So he's going into action in miniature form. A loose collection of Twiglets.
He is.
It changes the dynamic a bit, doesn't it, I suppose?
Well, I want to know what his voice is like, because they've confirmed that Vin Diesel's going to come back. So if he remains baby-sized Groot all the way through...
Yeah. I am Groot!
It could be interesting. We also know there's going to be changes to the lineup of the Guardians going through it. So other people are returning: Michael Rooker as Yondu, Karen Gillan as Nebula, Sean Gunn as Kraglin. Obviously, the five Guardians are back, so Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Bradley Cooper as Rocket, and Vin Diesel as Groot, Kurt Russell, and some new cast members: Elizabeth Debicki, who's fantastic. Playing a character that's yet to be announced. Pom Clementieff will play Mantis, and Chris Sullivan's also joined the cast as well. As you know, I love the first movie, and I'm really intrigued to see what they do this time around. But there you go, I'm very excited about that. And I'm also excited by the news breaking about Kingsman 2, which starts filming in the next 6 weeks or so. And Julianne Moore is in talks to play the bad guy, or bad lady, in that one. What do we reckon about that casting? Seems pretty interesting.
Very good. It reunites. Are we going to potentially be reuniting the cast of A Single Man? One by one.
Okay.
If Colin Firth returns. Is he returning?
Well, it says here he isn't returning for the sequel.
Right. Okay. But who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Really good. She's great. She's in one of the films we'll be reviewing later.
Yes.
So it just shows you her range. Yes. She can do all sorts of things.
Yes. Things we know previously that have been uttered publicly by Matthew Vaughn about the Kingsman sequel is that it will involve other Kingsmen around the world. So like different branches of the Kingsmen. Oh. So there'll be American Kingsmen, that sort of stuff. So I wonder if she'll be involved with that somehow.
Maybe.
But yeah, I don't know. I can't see how Colin Firth comes back for this movie, given events of the previous film, not to spoil too much, but yeah,
we shall see. Looks good.
We shall see, but
looks good.
Looks good.
I've got some news.
Oh wow!
Can I share it?
Yeah, of course you can.
It's Woolly on the web. Woolly on the web. Stephen Woolley.
Woolly on the pod. Woolly on the pod.
Yes, Woolly on the pod.
He had a movie with General Sod. Does he? Has he ever produced
never
a movie
been
with Terrence Stamp?
Never been involved. It's possible, but he's definitely going to be involved in a movie with Saoirse Ronan. Did I say that correctly? Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan. Yeah.
Who didn't win a BAFTA for her work in Brooklyn, which was fantastic. But she has scored the lead role in the latest Ian McEwan adaptation on Chesil Beach.
Okay.
With Stephen Woolley and his producing partner and partner, Elizabeth Carlson. Which I think is very, very good casting. If you read the book, it's actually more of a novella. It's really short.
Mm-hmm. I might read it then.
Why do you have like a specific maximum pages
you
have
me
won't
short.
Cross
well we've already discussed it this week myself and Chris that
yeah.
I struggle to get through an entire book
okay.
if Jack Reacher doesn't appear at some point because it seems what's the point
yeah,
well weird that you should say that because this is a book in which Saoirse Ronan will be playing a woman who is
it's called Jack Reacher
who is has a clock on her head no she's she's engaged to be married but it's a book about kind of sexual. Is it pronounced Mores or Moors?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe just use a different
Moors.
Phrase.
Moors. Okay. Yeah. Sexual politics, conventions
okay.
of
yeah.
the earlier parts of the 20th century.
I do like a nice sexual convention. I went to one in Blackpool. And
not those sort of sexual conventions, Chris.
Oh, okay. They're grim in Blackpool.
And her engagement to be married, and things go wrong, and then Jack Reacher turns up. So, yeah, that works. I'll bring it in for you tomorrow.
I wasn't on board, and then I am aboard. Johnny's only been at Empire a few weeks, but I've already learned that I have to go. If you read another book that's not a Reacher book, I have to go and scroll Jack Reacher's name in pen into a random page just to keep your interest up. Oh, there it is! I'm so close to finishing my Reacher reread.
Are you?
I'm halfway through Make Me at the moment.
Which is the most recent one.
The most recent one. This is it. This is it. And then what I'm doing after that, another segue. What I'm doing after that is I'm reading The Making of Make Me. Do you know about this book?
I'm which aware is, of it, yeah.
A guy who's a literary professor shadowed Lee Child through the writing of Make Me, the 20th Jack Reacher book, and wrote a book about it. So unfettered access to one of the great brains of our time.
Which sounds like a really good idea, but I think in practice, I did start it because I had Jack Reacher in it.
Yeah.
And...
I'm trapped in a room with two Jack Reacher fanatics. It's like a plot to a Jack Reacher novel. Please.
You had said nothing.
Come on.
All right, let's move on. Yeah. Some other stuff happening very, very quickly. Ron Howard is attached to direct, finally, this Robert Downey Jr. Pinocchio movie, which has been
at last
knocking around. Well, it's been knocking around for so long that I thought it had gone away. But Ron Howard is attached to direct that. Thoughts?
Well, I thought I expressed my thoughts with
a sarcastic at last.
Yeah, which is, look, I'm sure it'll be perfectly fine.
Okay. Adam McKay will definitely return to help script Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's good news. Donnie Yen is confirmed for Triple X, The Return of Sander Cage.
VU.
I know. I still can't believe that film's been made. Keira Knightley will play Catherine the Great for director Barbara Streisand.
Oh.
The news that's so guaranteed to make our art director Chris Lupton happy.
Yes.
It just couldn't be more.
He is a Barbara acolyte. So he loves Babs. He loves Babs. Barbara Streisand hasn't directed a film for two decades. Now she's directing a biopic of the Russian Empress Catherine the Great. Angelina Jolie was sniffing around a similar adaptation a while ago.
Ooh, competing Catherine the Great films.
I know, it's like when Deep Impact went up against Armageddon. It'll be huge. The biopic will find the young Catherine, he said, reading off a page, dealing with the rigors of royalty after 1762 when she took power following her husband's assassination. Trapped in an abusive marriage, she nevertheless went on to make strides in modernising the Russian Empire. So there we go.
Will there be a bit with a horse? I think that's what we're all thinking.
Almost certainly. Okay. Will Babs appear and will Babs sing? This is what we want to know.
No and no, probably.
I'm guessing so. It would be a bit weird.
Worth mentioning, Deadpool. The Deadpool movie announced on this very podcast, not however long ago when it was announced by Ryan Reynolds, made all the money at the box office this week. I don't think anybody was expecting it to go as big as it has.
Yeah.
$150 million over the President's Day weekend, which I believe for an R-rated movie beat 50 Shades of Grey, I think, held the record.
It beat everything.
Beat everything, but specifically that was the most recent record holder. And I'm not sure even 20th Century Fox's wildest dreams they could have imagined it's been as huge as it has been.
No.
So it's shifted everything, really, hasn't it? I mean, there'll be a sequel, obviously. Will it bring Deadpool back into the X-Men universe, potentially?
We talked about this in the spoiler special, which you can now listen to as well. And I would hope that they use his character sparingly.
Mm. Yes, it's right. Getting him out of the X-Men universe that's enabled this thing to be the success it's been, I think. So sticking him straight back in would potentially be an error.
Because I think also, we didn't talk about this in the spoiler special, I think if you put him into like an Apocalypse or you put him into a film with other X-Men where he can't break the fourth wall, that would not work for me. Yeah, he has some singy repartee with other people and he'd be taking the piss out of them. But you'd be expecting him to do his R-rated thing and he couldn't do that. And he couldn't talk to the camera because that would be weird. Mm. So keep him in his own movie and let other people come into his films and interact with him rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, it already didn't work in Wolverine Origins.
Precisely. When he couldn't talk to the camera, poor guy, and he has lips sewn shut. Terrible. Okay, some very sad news to round off the news section, sadly. So Police Academy star George Gaines, Commandant Lazard, a man who made me howl with laughter as a kid, most notably for the scene where he receives a clandestine how should I say this? Clandestine oral
blowjob.
Not right now, Phil. I'm doing a podcast. But a clandestine bit of oral pleasure from a lady of the night under a podium as he gives a speech. It's on YouTube, that scene. It's absolutely astonishing. And I've said it in the podcast before that I watched that film when I was 7 years old. I watched it with my mum. And I said, "Mum, what's the lady doing?" And then my mum said, "I don't know." Yeah, that's the thing. I still think she didn't actually know. But there you go. So he was amazing. 98 years old. He passed away this week. And a man who also passed away this week was the Polish film director Andrzej Sulawski, who directed a film called Possession in the early 80s, which is absolutely brilliant, bonkers, batshit crazy. Sam Neill and Isabel Adjani going through the mother of all marriage breakups. And I'm not going to say anything else about that because... Phil, have you seen this film?
No, I'd love to. No, yeah. I've heard many things.
It's astonishing, absolutely astonishing. And he passed away, age 75. And a lot of people on Twitter, including Scott Derrickson and Guillermo del Toro, were effusive in their praise for the man. Del Toro called him the master and said he was in talks to design a monster for his next film, which, of course, we will never see. But do check out Possession. I believe, weirdly enough, it's on YouTube. Which is probably not the greatest place to see it, but I'm not sure if there's a Blu-ray out at the moment. But do go and try and find this film because it will truly blow your mind. So that's George Gaines and Andrzej Sulawski, who died this week. Okay, time now for some guests on the Empire podcast. John Hillcoat's crime thriller, 999, has one of those amazing all-star casts that make you wish the poster could be a gatefold. It's got Chiwetel Ejiofor, Kate Winslet, Casey Affleck, Woody Harrelson, Norman Reedus, and it's got Aaron Paul and Anthony Mackie as well. They all star in a very tense tale of a group of robbers and corrupt cops who are under pressure to pull off the biggest score of their lives, lest the Russian mafia turn them into concrete sidings. Paul and Mackie popped into the pub booth last week when they were in town, and we sent our very own tough guy, Phil,
yeah,
along to chat with them. Enjoy.
Wow, what a pleasure to welcome Aaron Paul and Anthony Mackie to the Empire podcast.
Thank you.
Here to talk about John Hillcoat's 999.
Thank you, bud.
In this country, we might call it 999. It's the number you dial when you need ambulance, police, fire brigade. Your kettle's broken, you need someone to bring you a cup of tea, cat stuck up a tree. all those kind of British problems. In this movie, it means something slightly different. Do you just want to put it in context for the listeners, what 999 means here?
Yeah. It's a police code for officer down.
Police injured in the line of duty. They get on the radio, call 999. All the police rush to that location.
Okay, so that's a key plot point. You guys play bad cops.
Yes.
Bad cops look like so much fun to play.
They are.
Like, you get to do the cool cop stuff. You also get to do the cool bad guy stuff.
Yeah.
You must have seen John Hillcoat's other movies, Proposition, The Road, Lawless. Thought it's probably not going to be, you know, a lot of flowers and daisies, this one.
True.
Yeah, we definitely knew it was going to be a brutally honest, gritty film.
Mm. Yes, with some cool set pieces. Like, yeah. It's being mentioned in the same breath as Heat. It's got one of the best outdoor shootout scenes I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that whole...
Yeah.
Where you guys are kind of all covered in exploding dye pack.
Yeah, that was fun.
We definitely... Everybody had red rings around their noses for like 2 or 3 days with all the dye. There was a lot of hacking up red lungs.
What is that stuff? Do they use the same stuff that they use in actual bank... In actual bank, because to put it in context, you guys, it's early in the film, so it's not a big spoiler, but you break into a bank, steal, and your character, Jesse, Gabe Welsh, does a bad thing. He steals some money. It's not what they're there for. Grabs a bag of it, can't resist, and the dye pack explodes during the getaway, which causes mayhem. What do they explode? What is this red stuff that they explode all over you?
It was like, they said it was like a flavored smoke. Oh. They say it wasn't hazardous.
Yeah, exactly. I was
way.
Just going to say, they said it was safe.
Right.
But
nobody
know.
Could breathe or see for the rest of the day.
Like, you're going to be fine.
Right.
We don't want to be anywhere near it, but you're going to be
no
fine.
No one would come by the van.
You see the whole crew kind of moving their equipment to a safe perimeter.
And what pissed us off was, we're like, we're in a van with red dye with our face covered. Get somebody else to do this shit, you know?
Yeah, you can't. I mean, no one.
It could have been anyone.
No, it could have been anyone.
Was it you guys in that scene, or were you just kind of like in a different part of Atlanta having lunch at the time?
I wish,
yeah. It was us. It was us. It was fun.
Yeah. It looked grueling. Atlanta as a whole, I've kind of always wanted to. You grew up not too far from Georgia, didn't you, Anthony? I've always kind of liked the idea of going to Atlanta. I've got to be honest, having seen this film, I'm not entirely sure that I still want to. Did you have guys from like the Atlanta tourist board standing around the set going, please, you know,
not
taking Valium?
I just think it's very important. Don't come across the police in Atlanta.
Yeah, but not just the police. You've got Russian gangsters, Russian Jewish gangsters. You've got
which are the worst. Those are the worst.
Those are bad guys.
Nah, Atlanta's just as rough as any city. I mean, we don't have cab strikes or anything like that, but it's Atlanta definitely has a dirty side, and everybody kind of
tries to stay away from it. I can't believe you just compared the cab strike in London to the criminal underworld depicted in Triple Nine. Why didn't you make the movie in London with the cabs?
Exactly. That's how dirty y'all get, right? We have cab drivers who strike.
It gets pretty raw around here, Anthony. Stick around. There are some great set pieces, as I say. It's also got, just by happenstance, an incredible ensemble cast for kind of sofa jockeys and people that love Netflix and HBO. Jesse Pinkman, obviously. You've got Omar from The Wire. Daryl Dixon as well from The Walking Dead. Norman Reedus is in this movie. I don't even have a question. I just wanted to sort of put that out there that you've got some real TV pedigree here.
Yeah,
did you see Michael K. Williams dressed as Sweet Pea on set? Were you on set the day that you saw him? Because he plays this kind of, I don't know, how would you describe his character?
Flamboyant drag queen.
Yeah, that's
drag
that's
queen
a good,
prostitute
that's a good description.
Stripper.
Yeah.
I didn't see him. I wanted to see him.
We all wanted to
right.
see him.
I saw a picture of him, and I realized that I was happy I didn't see him in person.
You've seen him at the end of The Road. It seems like John Hillcoat has something in store for him in every one of his movies. That's
definitely,
kind of a bit out
definitely,
there.
Definitely.
It was pretty cool. You guys, the two of you, have an epic fight on a staircase. Fights, I imagine, are tough to do. Adding the staircase angle, how was it? Was he... Because you're kind of on the receiving end of this one on your own.
Yeah. For my part, I mean, Stuntman really did the heavy lifting for me. I just stood back and watched him fall down those steps over and over again. But at each landing, I was, you know, I'd run in and...
Yeah,
and do my stuff.
Fair enough. And Anthony, that was you.
That was me. I can throw, as you guys would say, a wicked punch.
yes, you can.
People that saw Ant-Man might disagree, potentially.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting in Ant-Man. I don't understand what it takes to win a fight anymore, because I landed more punches and he ran away at the end of the fight, but I lost. All right, fuck it. Let's do it. I don't know.
It was a lot of people's favorite moment in that movie.
Right.
Your kind of, I guess, defeated payoff line. Please don't tell Cap about this.
It was a fun movie. It was a fun scene to shoot. I feel like, you know, those little tidbits are what make the movies fun, because you don't expect them.
How long did it take you to shoot that fight sequence?
About a week.
Oh, wow.
About a week.
Wow.
Then I came back and I did reshoots like 4 times. Because... midway through, they're like, we're going to change the wardrobe. Then they were like, we're going to change the fight. Then they're like, oh, well, we're going to fight it like this way, and then we need you to say this line and do this. I'm like, dude, I've shot more for these fucking 3 minutes than any other movie I've ever done. 3 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, it was hardcore.
Compare it to this movie, Triple Nine.
There are no ants. and I think we kick a lot more ass in this movie.
You do. I hear that your stunt driving is awesome in this movie. Your van driving, especially.
Oh, yeah. I got to drive the van a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
So you're not using a lowrider. It was just all Aaron Paul behind the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. Any chance I get to get behind the wheel while rolling the camera, I feel like I go a little much. But it's great. It's so fun.
Self-realization. Very good.
Very good. But you felt safe, though, right?
Not at all. We were in the back like, holy shit.
The first 7 heads of the movie in this movie, I think 3 of them, were you there that day? I think that was more your scene, wasn't it, Anthony?
Yeah, we had a great makeup team.
Yeah.
And, you know, ironically enough, those guys made those heads and literally piece by piece put them together and tapped in the blood and all that stuff. It was really interesting to see them do, because they're just obsessed with makeup. So they want to make it look as real as possible.
Yeah, pretty macabre, ghoulish.
Yeah, Yeah. If you see them in person, they're even scarier.
There are a lot of kind of movies that this film brings to mind. The Departed is an obvious one as well. Heat for the set pieces. Did John mention any? Did he give you films that you should check out before you kind of turn up on set for the first time, or was he just not really drawing those kind of references?
No, I mean, he gave us all a big, giant Bible like of information that we could just kind of pull from. With me and all of the... Did you do some ride-alongs prior to this, right?
Yeah, another project.
Yeah, for another project. And he set me up with some ride-alongs with the LAPD. And so he just really... It was important to him that we had personal experiences to draw from. That was an interesting couple of days. Yeah,
you know, experienced anything like that before?
No, I never. It's a world that's so foreign to me that we all know exists, but being in the back of, you know, a black and white car going through those neighborhoods and seeing the way cops are viewed, it was really interesting,
eye opening,
right?
Yeah,
we'll get you sorted out with some ride-alongs in black cabs for the UK remake.
Yeah.
Open your eyes to some dark stuff, I reckon. I have to ask you this one. Captain America Civil War, are you Team Cap or Team Tony Stark?
Oh, man.
I think there's a right answer to this question, is there, Anthony?
No, I mean, I'm anti-establishment, so I'm definitely Team Cap.
Team Cap, though, aren't you?
Good observation.
Yeah, I would like to agree with this young man here, Team Cap all the way.
Can you tell me a little bit about the first movie? First Captain America was kind of a war movie. The second one was 70s spy vibe. What's the tone of this one going to be like? I'm assuming not another.
I would say this one is more of a true suspense thriller.
Right.
I think the build up to the fight is what makes it so interesting, because there are so many different factions of who's right and who's wrong and who supports who. So once we get all of that out of the way, then it becomes more, I would say, action-packed, more of us kicking each other's ass.
Because there's quite a lot of kind of character moments in four, I guess, in the first.
Well, you know, if it's a civil war, you have to establish why there's a war. You can't just start fighting and expect people to appreciate it. I feel like, you know, what Marvel is very good at doing is making these movies about stories and characters and then layering action into it.
Right.
And this holds true to that.
Chiwetel Ejiofor, your co-star from 999, he's just entered the Marvel
Doctor Strange.
Uh-huh. Have you been spinning him lies about how hard it is to work on the MCU?
No need to lie to him. He knows. He knows now.
You've told him about the reshoots.
Yeah, we told... Real simple. He's like, oh, you know, Doctor Strange is going to be so cool. It's like, be prepared for a lot of sleepless nights.
I just had a question about your character goes on a kind of a quite a dark emotional trajectory in this movie. A lot of drinking, a lot of boozing. Actors say that when they're playing drunk, the key is to like make like you're not drunk. You know, kind of just... Because when you're drunk, you try and pretend you're sober.
Right.
Are there different kind of approaches to playing drunk? Because this guy seems to have given up a little bit.
I just am drunk. Yeah. So I just drink on set.
Just all day.
And then, you know, hopefully not black out too much.
What's your poison? On-set poison?
Probably just whiskey. You know, it's just straight up whiskey.
Not some of that moonshine from Lawless.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not against moonshine.
You got some. I'll take a sip.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take some right now. But you don't. You never want to overplay drunk.
No. Got to ask you about the Hurt Locker. Working with Hawkeye, I guess, Jeremy Renner, if we're putting things in the Marvel context. What a hell of a movie with a great set piece in the middle of it. What was it like to film that? That looked incredibly arduous. I know there was a heat wave in Jordan when you were filming it.
It was hot as balls. It was so hot. Literally, if you imagine balls, that's how hot we were.
How hot are balls? Is there like
it was like 115, 120 degrees.
That's hot.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun to shoot. We had a really good time. It was, it's not as bad as I remember it being, now that I think back on it. But we had a really, really good time. Enjoyed working with each other.
I was going to say comes across. It doesn't come across because it's not fun. Well, they're debating. Yeah, you guys look like you're having a great time. That would be a terrible Hurt Locker.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, when you're doing that
happy
particular...
Locker.
Yeah, exactly. when Ralph Fiennes rocks up, which is a great moment. I don't know if you guys knew from the get-go that he was going to be playing that role or what.
We did. Yeah. We did. Catherine was very clear about, you know, her relationship with Ralph and how he was going to come in and, you know, Guy Pearce and how he's going to come in and do these small roles. And because, you know, out of the three of us, none of us were really known.
Yeah.
So she used her relationship with these guys to get the money and make the movie. So we owe them a huge, you know, service for doing that for us.
How long did that scene take, the sniper sequence?
Oh, that took about 3 days because we were just out in the middle of the desert. And the hard part was getting the weapons and gunpowder and everything into Jordan.
Right. Oh, I see.
So, but the Jordanian government has a lot of military vehicles that they got from the American government. So it looks like our military, but it's not.
Right.
You know, so it's it was fun, though. It was a lot of fun.
Aaron, I've got to ask you this about Jesse, about Breaking Bad. Have you, in the time that's elapsed since that show finished, had more people calling you bitch or more people asking you to call someone bitch on their behalf? What's the ratio of those things?
I get a lot of people asking me to call them bitch, but I get called bitch every day.
The nature of the beast.
The nature of the beast.
Yeah, and they throw in magnets at all for kind of variety?
Yeah. Everyone tries to mix it up. I was in London and someone screamed, "Gatorade me, bitch." And I had actually just got a Gatorade. And I took a sip, I heard it, and I put the cap back on and I threw it at the guy. And he caught it and he was just so excited. But I remember it was actually like a really warm day in London and I was excited about the Gatorade. But right. Then I had just given it away.
Last question. You both have kind of some cool props in this movie. You have an unusual cigarette filter holder, your character, Marcus. I don't know what the kind of genesis of that is, but I wondered if you guys could have kept one thing from 999, apart from the van, what it might have been.
I would have kept my gun.
I don't know. I think it would have been cool to have one of those severed heads. Is that weird?
No, not at all.
Because it's so... I'm out. But yeah.
Challenging to get through customs, I guess, at the end. Hard to explain. Guys, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
Appreciate it.
How were they, Phil?
Gritty.
They were gritty. Were they tough?
They were tough.
Were they undercover?
Anthony Mackie, in particular, was very, very excised by the... Because there were a lot of strikes that day. This may be a recurring theme in the podcast interview. There was a taxi strike. He also got wind of the doctor's strike and I think several other strikes. Barista strike. I don't know. There were strikes happening. And he, I think, felt that the fabric of our society was collapsing around us.
I feel like that every day.
But, yeah, I couldn't disagree.
Yeah.
It felt like one of those days. There were taxis beeping their horns outside. But yeah, no, there was they were a lot of fun, the two of them. They seemed to have good camaraderie on set.
Hey.
One of those films with great cast. I imagine a lot of people coming and going all the time. But, you know, the core cast were really, really good in this one.
Fantastic.
And as we will discover.
As we will discover, because that's kick off the review section of the podcast now with 999 here to tell us what the film is and whether it's any good. It's Jonathan Pyle.
Okay, so set in Atlanta, it's about some corrupt cops who are in with some, I'm right now I want to say robbers and I can't think of another word.
Baddies.
Yeah.
But they set up a bank heist and then, because they're all in with the Russian mob and the Russian mob are like, another job, and eventually they decide the only way to create a big enough distraction to allow them to do this other job is by killing a cop who happens to be Anthony Mackie's new partner, Casey Affleck.
Oh my God. So the plan is to try and kill Casey Affleck.
Yes.
Okay.
It starts really, really, really well. This is the scene that we were shown this scene maybe 2 months ago, before we saw the film proper, and the opening bank sequence is really good, and then the escape is really good, and they take an extra bag of money, which they possibly shouldn't do from the bank job, open it, and as they're on the freeway, red gas is spewing out everywhere, so, you know, their car is easily spottable by people. And this scene is really, really good, and they get away at the end. And, you know, I was very excited about this film.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be like The Town, which I think is a wonderful film. And I know we've got a recommendation on the magazine, but I was very disappointed with it.
You were? I was a bit more up on it than that. We gave it three.
Okay, three stars.
Just a smidge more up on it. Interestingly, our review points out that this was, I think, the tail end of the 2010 blacklist, which yielded such movies as Edge of Tomorrow, Argo, Margin Call, Looper, Crazy Stupid Love, and Chronicle. And also, to a lesser extent, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. So
always,
that was a,
there's always that one,
largely
isn't
a boon year for the blacklist.
Yeah.
And I think the material is variable in this, isn't it? The set pieces are fantastic. I think John Hillcutt, who we know from The Proposition, The Road, and Lawless, by now you can kind of establish what his interests are. He likes blokes, guns, violence, yeah, and that blurry line between lawlessness, anarchy, and kind of society trying to keep a handle on its fringes, and this is set right on that line, isn't it? But we've been there before so many times, you know, from Serpico. The 70s were full of great movies of this ilk.
Done better, I think.
Yes,
there is another set piece which I think is fantastic as well, when they're going into this apartment block and they're all in a line and they've got a shield at the start and they're, you know, looking for the perp,
yeah,
who is trying to escape through, I suppose, a warren of corridors and secret rooms behind cupboards, I think. And that is, again, a really, really great action sequence. And suddenly, you know, you can feel the room, you know, suddenly become interested again. Because I think, for large parts, it's kind of like, what's going on? What's the motivations are kind of fuzzy for some of the characters. Woody Harrelson's in it, but not really, and...
So does the film focus largely on... It's an ensemble cast, obviously, but would you say the two people the film focuses on are Casey Affleck and Chiwetel Ejiofor's character? Is that fair to say? Who's the head of the gang? Who's the one who has the most pressure on him to pull this off?
I think what it's trying to do is be a kind of reverse End of Watch, in the sense that the real focus is going to be Anthony Mackie and Casey Affleck.
Okay.
Who's the two partners and their loyalties, because Anthony Mackie is established in the first scene, a bad guy, but he does still have loyalties. He still respects his debt to Casey Affleck, which again is established early on that he owes him. So their relationship, but there's so many other characters going on. Kate Winslet is still seen. She plays a sort of Russian mobster's mole. He's back in Russia, and the driver for this is that she needs some information, which is going to get him released from prison in Russia. And she is ruthless. Her sister is Gal Gadot.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got so many supplementary characters. Woody Harrelson kind of does great work, true detective style. But again, they're not really given enough time. Chiwetel's character is blurry. I think it's sort of lurches from conventional character stuff to set pieces that are really elevated. You know, the opening, I think, I agree with Johnny, is fantastic, and there are some really good visuals and some good chases. But
this is the sort of film that's really up my street. I love films like this with sweaty cops and sweaty criminals, you know.
Yeah,
life and death stakes attend, you know, couldn't get much higher really than this. But it feels like it's a slightly,
well, not
three stars, but slightly underwhelming given the pedigree of the people involved. I think John Hillcutt's a fantastic director, but
the film I keep on coming back to is The Town, which I think it's very similar to in its setup, and you know, The Town is just effortlessly better throughout, I think.
Yeah, I'm more up on it than Johnny. I enjoyed it for the most part quite a lot, but it's conventional and lacking a sort of clear through line. And there are moments where you're like, I've seen this before so many times.
Okay.
But there are bits. I mean, Hillcutt is good. He's got a great eye. There are set pieces that are, you know, almost on the sort of Michael Mann Heat level, I would say, especially that opening. So for me, I had a bit more to recommend it.
All right, so three stars then for 999. And next up is another cop drama, but this one's very, very different. This is Julianne Moore and Ellen Page in Freeheld. Phil Catt.
Hi. Yeah, Julianne Moore plays another detective, called Laurel Hester. This is based on a true story, which is worth pointing out straight off the bat, because that, I guess, kind of constricts what you can do with it. You know, you have to follow the trajectory of the story as it happened. And it's a pioneering kind of human rights drama, effectively. Julianne Moore's copper is diagnosed with cancer. Her younger partner Stacey, played by Ellen Page, who's a mechanic. You sort of see their relationship come together, and then you see that Julianne Moore's character is basically terminally ill. But her police department, that she served loyally for a very long time, is not prepared to transfer her benefits in the event of her death, in the time of her death, to her partner. So it's a sort of a pioneering human rights courtroom drama. Pretty conventional in that regard. It feels like it's sort of one of those films that was striving to be a bit more Oscar-worthy, perhaps a bit more awards-worthy. But, I mean, it is a very worthy film, and it's obviously an important subject. Mm. It's really only when Steve Carell turns up, seemingly in an entirely different movie, playing a kind of Peter Tatchell on speed, gay rights campaigner, who, when the film really catches fire, he brings a sort of velocity and energy to it, which it kind of lacks. It's moving, obviously. It's a very sad story. It's a very powerful story. But again, slightly conventionally told, apart from those bits wherein Steve Carell appears. So we gave that one 3 stars.
3 stars as well for that one. Yeah, it is a bit strange when what happens when movies that are seemingly made to court Oscar don't hit. They don't land. Yes. What happens to them? Is there a retirement home for them or something?
They kind of end up coming out around this time or maybe next month, and you can kind of tell what their intention was with the release date. It just got a great cast, this one. Julianne Moore is fantastic in everything. I really liked Ellen Page. I thought she stole it, actually. She's kind of a, you know, she's not as articulate as her partner, but she eventually finds her voice through the trauma that she's kind of subjected to. Two types of trauma, really, prejudice and grief. And she communicates both those things really, really well. So I think she stole the show for me.
Fantastic. Talking to Steve Carell, did you see this last night where Emma Thrower of this parish tweeted, she said she'd been watching Fawlty Towers and reading up about Fawlty Towers, and apparently it's been remade on US TV, or at least they've tried to make versions of it. And there's a version from 1997 which stars Tim Curry and Annie Potts. So Tim Curry plays Simon Ferguson, who's a hotelier in the States, and Steve Carell's in it. It's called Over the Top. And Steve Carell plays a Greek guy called Yorgo Galifianakis. And there's bits of this on YouTube. Check it out. It is incredible. He's in a different sitcom to everyone else. It's just amazing. But also, he doesn't look like his age today. So that's kind of weird. But yeah, check it out. Steve Carell, completists, and I know you're out there. 3 stars in for Freeheld. And then last this week is Bone Tomahawk, the incredibly violent Western Bone Tomahawk. This is the time for Kurt Russell Westerns. This is the season, it seems. You wait ages for one, and then two come along at once. So, Phil, what did we make of this one?
We really liked it. Mm-hmm. Very much. 4 stars watch.
So why do we leave it to the end? I don't know. There you go. The best, save the best for last.
Who doesn't want to watch Kurt Russell in a Western, is all I can say, especially after The Hateful Eight. And in this one, he plays a sheriff who is basically... He's put together one of those sort of hapless Tarantino Django-style posses to track down a group of cannibal tribesmen,
yes,
who've abducted a couple of people from his jail.
Including...
Whereupon,
yes,
mayhem and bloody violence ensues,
yes,
across the West. Our reviewer, the inestimable Kim Newman, described it as a mashup of the Searchers and Cannibal Ferox. So it's, yes, a kind of an exploitation Western.
Yes.
If those things hit your sweet spot, mm-hmm, and you've got a strong stomach, mm-hmm, this one is well worth checking out.
Yes, this one switches gears. Although it's quite violent from the off, but it does switch gears. So at one point, it's a fairly straightforward, quite languid Western directed by S. Craig Zahler, about a posse trying to get... The posse includes... This has got Kurt Russell as the grizzled old sheriff who's got this wonderful facial hair. Not quite the same tash that he had in The Hateful Eight. And not quite the same character either, but...
Doesn't want to repeat himself.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't want to do that, quite clearly, which is why he's playing himself in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. But, so he rounds up this posse because Patrick Wilson is a sort of cowardly type. His wife has been kidnapped by this tribe there, and then they go off to search for her. So far, so searchers, and then it takes this weird, extraordinarily violent, very gory, not for everybody... left field turn when the cannibal tribesmen turn up, and there is the things happen to characters that will make you want to part with your lunch if you are of a, you know, slightly weak stomach perhaps. But yeah, really, really good, really striking, really holds the attention.
The Western is back, hallelujah.
Well, it's never gone away, has it?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah,
has it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
OK, Okay, name me a good Western that came out after Unforgiven.
After Unforgiven?
Mm-hmm. Open Range.
Between Open Range and Unforgiven.
It doesn't matter whether it's a good Western. There have been Westerns coming out consistently.
Yes, you know what I mean.
The Postman.
You know what I mean.
The Postman. Fair point. Johnny wins once again, I think. So 4 stars for Bone Tomahawk, probably the film of the week. Also out this week is Disney's sea rescue drama, The Finest Hours, starring Chris Pine and Casey Affleck. Sadly, it doesn't prove to be their finest hours. It's a good wordplay there. We gave it 2 stars. And there's the Rebel Wilson, Leslie Mann rom-com, How to Be Single, which we gave 3 stars to, which is, of course, a recommendation, as we say on the podcast. It's a busy old week once again at the Multiplex, an art house emporium of your choice. And that is it for this week's Empire podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun when it's our 200th podcast coming to you live. Well, recorded as live. Recorded in front of a live studio audience, I think is what they'd say on Cheers. From the Prince Charles Cinema in London. It is sold out, but do keep an eye on things just in case people can't make it and they hand in tickets for whatever reason. So you never know. If you want to come, you might still be able to. And if you can't make it, you can listen to it next Friday when it's going to be presented to you as a regular podcast. I'm not going to tell you. Usually at this point I tell you who's on the podcast, but I'm not going to tell you who's on the show next week, largely to preserve the mystery for the studio audience, and in no small part because I don't know who's going to be on the show next week, and I'm in a state of mild panic on the verge of full-blown terror with every passing day. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fine. It's going to be absolutely fine. It's going to be totally fine in the night. The worst case scenario is that our special guest will be Peter Lorre, which I'm sure Helen will absolutely love. Until then, it is goodbye from Johnny.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Phil.
Happy birthday, Amy!
Oh, man, I was going to do that. And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to air to bake myself into a cake and leap out at Amy. I'm sure she'll appreciate that. Happy birthday once again. See you next week. Bye.